Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, did we forget a free agent signing that you like? For John Robinson.
You know, first of all, it's really funny to look through this stuff even from like 2 years ago, you know, and how things can change. So, yes, one that we shouldn't forget. So, I did this. I mean, I can read, like, go through stuff that's like from 2 years ago, right? I mean, like.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying, I'm talking paywall wise. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Yeah. Like, come on. It's two freaking years ago. So I did like transformative moves, good moves, and what I call the bad moves. Neutral, incomplete news moves, and then like whatever, like terrible, right? Bad and terrible. I guess there's five options. So in the transformative, number one, by the way, trading for Ryan Tannehill, March 16th, 2019. Number two, drafting Derrick Henry in the second round. So going all, you know, trading the number one pick, A.J. Brown, drafting him, drafting Kevin Byard. These are like the trading DeMarco Murray, trading for DeMarco Murray, you know, swapping fourth rounders, which, you know, I mean, that changed the team. It really did in 2016, as people remember. I got Logan Ryan in the transformative. Now, again, this is before what we just called the best. So Logan Ryan I called transformative, but another one, Kenny Vaccaro. If you remember that, I mean, Jonathan Cyprian was supposed to be the Titans' starting safety. I don't think he was going to be that good.
He wasn't.
But he had a season-ending knee injury early August, early camp 2018, and they had to go find some help, and they get Vaccaro, which is kind of amazing, but it just hadn't worked out for him in New Orleans. And, of course, Vaccaro ends up being a really important player for a couple years for this team for three good seasons for this team. And I know things started to go a little bit south in 20, and then they moved on. But for those 2 years, big, big deal. So I think you have to include him when you talk about best free agent moves the Titans have made. And, there's really
– we have a vote for Bud Dupree on the text line.
Well
– To be determined.
Yeah, that's one that you'd put in the incomplete category right now. But here's another one. And I think I put this in the good category, at the top of the good category, but signing Ben Jones.
It's pretty good.
I mean, Ben Jones, again, that's that first year. You know, that first year you trade for DeMarco Murray, you sign Ben Jones, you draft Jack Conklin. All of a sudden you are going downhill at people. You're running the ball. Taylor Lewan, it works out perfectly. He finds a new level as a player, all that stuff. You draft Derrick Henry. You know, all of a sudden you're a big, tough team that people don't want to deal with because you run the football, because running the football works. So Ben Jones should also be mentioned among the best. I mean, look, think about what they've gotten out of him now, you know?
Well, and he's back now too, so could continue to get. They're going to need him this year. I know everybody, every time I start talking about Ben Jones, I think he's like 39 years old. He's 32. That continues to just blow my mind every time. 32 years old.
Yeah. So when they signed him, he was 26.
Yeah.
I thought he was 32 then, but he wasn't.
He was not.
How about that? Another one that we should mention, though, is Roger Saffold.
Yeah.
I mean, Roger Saffold, it was a good free agent signing for sure. That worked out really well. I'm interested. I'm interested to see Buffalo. If he can stay healthy, if they have any kind of physical run game, straight ahead running back run game to go with everything else they do, whoo, Buffalo, man.
You got the Bills going 17-0.
I'm all in on the Bills. I think this is the year they're gonna win the whole thing. Yep, you can put the thumbs down all you want there, Michelle. I see you in there.
JC in Goodlettsville texting you, going back to the contract year discussion, says contract years are stressful. That's why Joe swapped to coffee edibles. It's coming from JC in Goodlettsville.
I mean, like, there's got to, like, have we stumbled on something that should be an incredible huge market?
Maybe so.
I mean, well, they have like espresso beans, like the little chocolate little pop bite things.
That's not the same thing. I want a full on edible.
Joe, you would be shaking.
Like, whoa, bro.
It's a lot of caffeine,
Oh, man.
Get in the lab. Get in the lab, Joe.
Ugh. I need to go sit by myself for a little bit. This caffeine's really hitting me, bro.
Mike in Clarksville is saying, what about Deontay Foreman? Although he's not with the team anymore, he was key last year to our success. It's a good one. I wouldn't say that's in the same category as Saffold and Jones and those other guys.
No, but it's a good one for sure. I mean, because they were obviously scrambling. They signed Adrian Peterson. That wasn't the answer. And getting Foreman back was definitely good. I'm trying to find, like, there's nothing that's going to touch. I'm going back through all the deals. Like, in the terrible category, I had three. Okay? See if you can guess them.
So Beasley.
But again, this came out in 20, so it's 2 years old. I'm reading 2 years old articles by myself, which is how much I love myself.
Who was the defensive tackle that they signed? Sylvester Williams, was that it?
Yeah, and Benny Logan.
That's right.
Yeah, they had some misses there. Those weren't on it. I'll give you two. One is just the whole kicking fiasco of 2019, which is, again, you sign Cairo Santos, he flames out. You sign Cody Park, you release him, suck up, plays. He's not ready. He's hurt. He's not good. You sign a kickoff specialist, Ryan Santoso, who couldn't reach the end zone. And then you sit, suck up, back down, you sign Greg Joseph. So, and then I also had drafting Luke Falk in the sixth round because it's just like, it's a waste. But, I mean, you should know the other one, the last one. No, again, this is all
2 years ago.
This is all transactions, including draft.
Okay,
so this is everything. Now and again, this came out about a month before Isaiah Wilson was drafted.
That's what I was thinking. But I don't know. You got to tell me.
It's Kevin Dodd. Second round pick. Yeah, second round pick on Kevin Dodd, at that point was by far the worst draft, pick. And it's not anymore.
It's not.
He will not be talked about that much anymore. Congratulations, Kevin Dodd. But sorry,
go, Kevin.
Sorry, we just brought you up, dude.
Dave in Big Rock texting in says, way too early predictions from Robbie and Rex Road. In the top half of our schedule, where do we pick up W's besides the Giants and Washington? Well, I had Titans going 11-6, and I'll just go briefly top half of the schedule. I think they beat the Giants. I think they beat the Raiders. I think they beat the Colts one out of the two games, and I think they beat the Commanders and the Texans. So I guess is that the top half of the schedule? Is that good enough till that's through October? So is that top half?
I think so.
Okay.
Now I'm going to have to – I know that I had them I went through all this.
Your overall record was 10-7 for the Titans. Again, this is first blush.
Yep,
we'll have our official predictions coming up in August.
Wow. And by then, there's so much more information that – it could turn it to 12-5 or 8-9.
Yeah.
But, so I went 1-3 to start. So for sure. I mean, I think you got to beat the Giants, but then you go to the Bills. I don't like the Raiders game that early, but I went, Commanders, Colts, and Texans. So I've got them 4-3 after 7. If you want to get all the way to the Chiefs, I guess I got them 4-4 after 8, which used to be the halfway point of the season when, the NFL made sense and had 16-game seasons.
Bo in Murfreesboro says, how many consecutive games have the Titans beaten the Bills? It's a few. They own the Bills, man. Everybody's afraid of the Bills.
Isn't it just two?
I think it's two.
Am I wrong?
I think it's two.
Yeah. Because in
18 they came here and won.
Well, no, in 18, Vrabel's first year, that was the game at Buffalo when Mariota
came here in
19-1. So, two straight.
Yeah.
But two very
impressive wins.
You got a blowout on a Tuesday, and then you got my night football game last year was a classic, man. That was such a great game.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, including how much trouble could the Titans be in terms of their prospects to repeat as division champions. Some interesting discussion on that on NFL.com. We'll get to that coming up on the other side. Let me tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. You can go yard all May long with $5 Dinger Tuesdays on FanDuel Sportsbook. This season, all customers will get $5 for every home run hit by both teams when you place a $25 to hit a home run wager on Tuesday MLB games. And the best part about Dinger Tuesdays is even if your bet loses, FanDuel will pay you $5 for every home run. I love Vlad Guerrero Jr. from the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm going with him more often than not. But you take it any way you want to take it. Just don't go with the Cincinnati Reds. They can't even make contact with the baseball, much less hit home runs. So just try to avoid the Cincinnati Reds. What are you waiting on? Just pick your home run hitter and turn big swings into big wins. There's no better place to bet America's pastime than on America's number one sportsbook. Head on over to your FanDuel account or download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up using promo code ROB. Once again, that promo code is ROB. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. A max bonus of $25. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5-106.3 The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll be joined by David Beauclair from SI.com coming up at 7:30. Mark in Clarksville texting in says, hot take of the year, the Tennessee Titans will lose to the New York Football Giants in week one. That would be a very Titans thing to do.
That wouldn't bode well.
That would not bode well.
Then they'd certainly go beat
just
Buffalo.
Just hammer the Bills the next week.
That's probably the only way they beat Buffalo is if they lose to the Giants first.
And you're high on the Buffalo Bills. You love them.
Well, you're not high on the Buffalo Bills?
No.
I'm high on the Buffalo Bills.
Come on, no. Come on.
You think they're going to be the best team ever.
I think that although it doesn't work out, like it's not nearly as linear in the NFL as like the NBA, for example. You know, they pay your dues, you take some lumps, you learn, you get better, then you win in those clutch moments. I think that this is they've built up to this year. This is the year they have to win it. They should win it. They should win it. Now, sometimes Josh Allen will arm punt one on a 3rd and 7 when the guy's wide open.
They will do that.
You know. But, man, or sometimes
that
amazing Bills defense gives up 80 yards in 4 seconds. You know, when all they have to do is, like, not completely screw it up, and they do. So
sometimes they look at Travis Kelce and they say, well, you know, he's not very good. Let's just leave him alone.
Yeah. Yeah, let's focus on Cole Beasley. Let's double Cole Beasley. That's not really what happened in the play, but you get
especially because Cole Beasley plays for their team and not the Chiefs.
Oh, yeah. What am I talking? Oh, my God. Some good Buffalo. Like I told you, guys, we get nothing but good Buffalo Bills analysis over here.
That's right.
Let's focus on Devin Pringle.
It's like when Broussard was like, Taylor Lewan of the Bills. Yeah. He could just block.
That's right.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, let's focus on Byron Pringle. I said Devin Pringle, too. Good Lord. By the way, real quick, I got to give a shout-out on this text line to Hind Cider, a top-shelf bold and bald bouquet of apples from around the world with a hint of Stillman Tears.
Okay.
Well done.
There you go.
Thank you.
Very nicely done.
Give me your name, too.
All right. So NFL.com has come out with this piece, and it's interesting to think about in terms of the reigning division champions that are the most vulnerable heading into the 2022 NFL season. And there's different votes. I mean, somebody voted for the Cowboys, so I guess they're expecting like a resurgence from the Eagles or the Commanders with Carson Wentz.
You ever heard of A.J. Brown?
Yeah, there is a guy named A.J. Brown.
He's on the Eagles now.
He is. A lot of votes for the Bengals as well, just because the AFC North, it's very difficult to repeat as division champions. James Jones, voting for the Titans, says, while the Titans made a number of moves, they didn't necessarily improve on paper, especially after trading away A.J. Brown on the opening day of the 2022 NFL Draft. The Colts, on the other hand, traded for former MVP Matt Ryan and former Pro Bowler Yannick Ngakoue, while also signing 2019 Defensive Player of the Year Stephon Gilmore. So James Jones, former Packer receiver, throwing it out there that the Titans are the team that is most vulnerable to not repeating as division title. Joe Rexrode, your reaction to James Jones' thoughts there, and As you look around the league, which team do you think is most vulnerable to not repeating as champions? Because I have an answer that I think will surprise you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I don't disagree with what James Jones said, and I think that that's going to be a pretty popular sentiment. You know, I do think if you want to talk about, because there's always like national narratives about a local team and they miss something or the other here. I do think that some people are sleeping a little bit on the Titans defense based on what I'm seeing. Like, like Bleacher Report just put a post-draft top seven defenses in the league didn't have the Titans. I think that's a miss. So I think people are sleeping on that aspect, but I certainly understand people looking at the Titans offense right now and wondering how that team is going to be better. And, you know, the Colts, it's again with the Colts, it just comes down to the question of the quarterback. And I think you're going to have a lot more stability and reliability going from Mr. Commander to Matt Ryan, but how much does Matt Ryan have left? It's hard to know. When you have a quarterback who's been so good, who has now been playing for a really bad team the last couple of years, like when the Titans went there, what year was that? Was that 19? You know, you still had vintage Julio at the time. Ridley, I mean, Matt Ryan did not look good in that game. So that's just an up-close look. I was like, boy, he's really faded as a player. But you give him a running game. You give him an offensive line. I think it's going to be a good race. The most vulnerable, I disagree on Dallas. I'm looking at your Packers a little bit because the roar is in the middle of being restored.
Yeah.
I think the Bengals could be overtaken by the Ravens this year.
They absolutely could. I've thought about them. Mine's Kansas City. I think they're the most vulnerable. Number one, their division's gotten a lot better. Number two, they've lost Tyreek Hill, which I think is such a big part of what they do offensively. And number three, their schedule is brutal. They did that. Their schedule is so brutal. And we talked about this last week. This is the first, I think, first 10 games for the Chiefs. Cardinals, Chargers, Colts, Bucks, Raiders, Bills, Niners, Titans, then you have the Jags, and then the Chargers again, and then the Rams. That's the first, like, 11 games for the Chiefs. I mean, the schedule is just brutal. And then they've got the Bengals and the Broncos right after that. I mean, there's almost zero break on their schedule. So I think Kansas City is the most vulnerable. Their division, I think, will be the best in the league. They lost just their most electrifying player. I don't know that Tyreek Hill is the best receiver in the NFL. I think he's certainly the most electrifying receiver in the NFL. Yeah, he's the scariest. I mean, just what he can do with his speed. And then the schedule. Those three things, I think Kansas City is the most vulnerable.
I mean, again, go back to that Buffalo game. It came down to, you know what? You just have to force the ball to him, get him the ball, and let him do things. And he destroyed them. No, I agree. That's a good call. And that schedule is, I mean,
it's brutal.
It's pretty amazing. Like, you finally get a little break in there. You get a little Jags. You get a little Texans later, but boy. You know, again, that's the thing, too, with the Chiefs in recent years. That's been a bad division. You know, so that's a big deal to be able to just count on, like, you know, going like 5-1 in your division every year. That's just over now.
Yeah, and I still don't know that I think that Denver is going to be as good as a lot of people think they're going to be. Yeah. Now, Russell Wilson is obviously a gigantic upgrade at quarterback over Drew Locke, so I'm not going to sit here and pretend like that's not a factor. You know, some people are wanting to anoint Denver as like this Super Bowl contender, and I don't think I'm willing to go there with Denver at this point. But certainly they're a much bigger challenge now for Kansas City than they were with Drew Locke as the quarterback. So you've got Herbert taking another step. You know, that combo, if Derek Carr stays healthy, that combo of him and Waller and now Davante Adams and Hunter Renfro, that's a heck of an offense you got to deal with the Raiders as well. I think Kansas City, I still think they're a playoff team. I don't think they're winning that division this year.
Who is?
I think Chargers.
Yeah.
I think Captain Two-Point Conversion is
going to. Everybody loves the Chargers. Yeah. But, no, I mean, it's hard not to like them. Hard not to like that roster. Yeah, captain. Yeah, I mean, he really does.
Maybe kick an extra point every now and then.
He does need to punt. Punting's good sometimes. It helps. You're not that high school coach in Alabama or whatever, wherever that guy is.
Always goes for two and onside kicks and all that stuff.
Yeah. No, that's a good call. I mean, you know, you go through it. There's actually quite a few division races that could turn out differently this year. But that's the league. I mean, the parity is what they want. Parity is what they've got.
Well, I thought for a while the NFC South maybe could be different, and then Brady came back, and I was like, okay, well, it'd be fine.
Well, the NFC South was looking like it might be who's the division champ by default,
yeah,
you know? But now, yeah, that's just going to be their domain, isn't it? Saints are going to be good on D. And they at least aren't
trying. They got Jameis,
man. Yeah, they got Jameis. They're not trying. I mean, I am interested in the Saints because I still think Jameis has a lot of talent, and they at least have moved on from Taysom Hill.
I just need them to continue to interview Jameis. I love Jameis Winston. I really do. He was on the NFL Network the other day when the schedule came out. He's like, I always knew my passion was football. But when I was out, I realized my passion. And there was like this long dramatic pause. And he goes, was playing football. And he like threw, it was amazing. I love Jameis Winston so much.
He is, yeah. He's a lot of fun. It's been quite a ride for Jameis Winston.
I got a text that says, I think the Bills have a slow start with the new offensive coordinator. Getting them week two is best case for the Titans to win. I will say, going up to Buffalo, if you're going to go up to Buffalo, don't do it in the cold.
Well, except that you run the football. That's so, true. When I mean, remember when New England beat Buffalo, that helped that they couldn't complete a pass.
That's the thing.
In their house, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what about the Titans' offense early? You know, I have a feeling, you know, if things go as they hope.
Just turn around and hand it off to Derrick Henry.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, like, I think a month later they might be better in the passing game and more equipped to win that game. But I don't know. Someone also asked on the text line about the best and worst trade since we were talking about free agent signing. What comes immediately to mind? I mean, there haven't been a ton of trades, but the best trade easily is the trade for Tannehill.
Yes.
I mean, if Tannehill does nothing next year but underhand throw picks for 5 weeks until he's, like, benched and cut, it's still easily the best trade. He will not – right? I mean, he won't have a better trade than that in his entire
– it's hard to imagine.
Right?
Fourth rounder for high-level starting quarterback for a few years.
And, you know, there's some good ones too, like DGB for Kelly and DeMarco Murray trade was great. What's the worst trade? Julio Jones, right?
Yeah.
So there you go. Pretty simple.
There you go. Coming up next, we'll be joined by David Beauclair from SI.com. We'll get his thoughts on all things Tennessee Titans. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in David Beauclair from SI.com. David, what's going on? How are we doing?
Fellas, I'm good. How are you guys?
We're great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. David, what did you think of the rookies this weekend in rookie minicamp for the Titans, specifically Malik Willis and Treylon Burks? What were your impressions of those two guys?
You know, we'll start with Malik Willis, I guess. He, it was really fun to watch him in a lot of ways. He's his delivery, I think if you were a quarterback coach and you were breaking down his arm angle and everything, you'd talk about his elbow drops a little too close to his body a few times. I mean, it's not the ideal delivery by any stretch of the imagination, but he's accurate enough, or at least he was this weekend, and you know, I don't think this weekend probably paints the complete picture of that, but he wasn't what I would call supremely accurate, but he got the ball where he wanted it to go most of the time, and gave a lot of the receivers a chance to maybe run after the catch, not every one of them, and you know, he had more zip on the ball than I would have expected, quite honestly. I mean, that was the one thing that was absolutely most consistent about it, is that if you had a radar gun on it, I think the speed would have been very consistent, and it would have been what you would consider above average. He did one time, he was kind of rolling to his right, did drop down and did the Patrick Mahomes sidearm thing, which I thought was fun to see, because let's face it, he's not the biggest guy in the world, and he is going to, you know, in the NFL, he's going to have to look for throwing lanes that some taller quarterbacks like a Ryan Tannehill, for example, don't have to worry about. So clearly he has that sort of imagination and that willingness to sort of make something, you know, take what the defense gives him, if you will, in that way, in terms of trying to find a, you know, way to get the ball out. And then he handled himself in the press conference terrifically and showed a lot more personality, a lot more charisma than he did in draft night. I think this was obviously much more the real Malik Willis and what guys can look forward to in the huddle and in the locker room and whatnot, and gives you a real good, I think a real good idea of kind of what leader he is. You know, John Robinson talked about on draft night that he was a guy that you could see teammates liked to make plays for him, and they celebrated when he made plays, and they, you know, that kind of thing. And it was pretty evident after talking to him why that would be the case. Then you got Treylon Burks, who, for a first round draft pick, it was pretty disastrous start in terms of, you know, the conditioning issues, couldn't get through the first practice. And then, you know, some people have characterized it as he was a full participant in the second practice on Saturday. And I would say this, he was out there the entire time, but by no means was he a full participant. You know, the second half of that workout, he was almost exclusively a spectator. I mean, there was one 7-on-7 period where he didn't take a single rep. You know, I mean, they were clearly, you know, watching his workload and trying to get him through that workout too. So, but that happens. And if you're Treylon Burks, you're in a no-win situation. I mean, in a way, this is a terrible, terrible situation for him right now, because all the pre-draft talk about him was, this is a guy who's comparable to A.J. Brown. And if you're the Titans or the Titans fan, you're thinking, wow, you know, what an interesting pairing that would be, to put him with A.J. Brown, and you know, he could learn from A.J. and, you know, so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden, A.J. gets traded and they draft Treylon Burks, and now he has to be A.J. Brown. And A.J. Brown, you know, think about this franchise, 20-some years here in Tennessee, it took them what, 22 years to find an A.J. Brown. And four different general managers tried to get a wide receiver like that. John Robinson finally did. And now we all just think, well, here's another one 3 years later. You're just going to drop him in. He's going to do the same thing. You know, the comparisons and everything are just, the standard has been set so high that it seems like it's almost going to be impossible for Treylon Burks to succeed. Now, obviously, there's a long way to go. He's going to do whatever he's going to do, but this was certainly not a good start for him in that regard.
So on Burks, David, like you said, they held him out of a lot of stuff on Saturday. He was there all the way to the end. He got in here and there with a rep. It seemed like, you know, I mean, he was even asking, like, you know, about going in and certain reps, things like that. So do you – we're all sitting here just speculating, and unfortunately we didn't get Vrabel Saturday. Not that Vrabel's, you know, too revealing on anything like that, but we didn't get Burks either. Burks probably could have cleared some things up. Do you look at this as he's in such bad shape they're being careful, or that there was something else that was bothering him out there?
I think my take was that, you know, because they've got the microchips and the shoulder pads, and they monitor how many steps or how much distance a guy travels at all times and whatnot. And my guess was he was not in the football shape that he thought he was in, got winded and overcome a little bit by the conditions on Friday. So on Saturday, they said, okay, this is the distance he's going to go on Saturday. And when he, you know, when he gets to that point, we're going to stop him. And so they, and it was probably a number that was a lot smaller than what the other wide receivers were. And they were probably paying pretty close attention to it. That was, that was my take on it. It's funny. It made me think back to 2010 when Derek Morgan was drafted. And, Derek Morgan had some similar issues when he first came in. I remember him like having a hamstring issue right away, and you're thinking, wow, that's a bad thing for your first round draft pick to come in and pop a hamstring right away. But he, Derek Morgan was always an unfailingly honest guy, and he said the whole pre-draft process and everything is really hard because you're flying from this city to that city and you're trying to get a workout in and you're trying to eat right, and but you're in airports and you're doing this, and he said, he was like, I did the best I could and I thought I was doing enough, but I realized pretty quickly when I got here I hadn't done enough, and I'm looking forward to being part of a team now and just and doing the actual conditioning that I need to do. So I have to assume it was sort of a similar thing with Treylon Burks here, that, it's not the end of the world when a guy goes through this, and you can sort of see how it would happen. It's just kind of a little disappointing, I think, that, because you want, like, especially in a thing like this rookie orientation, like, you want your first round draft pick to be the man of this, of these workouts, right? You want him to be the best player out there. You want him to be the guy working the hardest. You want him to be the guy sort of living up to the reputation and setting the standard for everybody else, and that certainly was not the case this time.
David Beauclair from SI.com on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, David, we were talking about this earlier in the show, looking at this Titans defense. How good do you think this Titans defense can be? And if you had to identify a spot or two that you're worried about on that side of the ball, what comes to mind?
Well, there's no doubt that the cornerback spot that Jack Rabbit Jenkins held down last year is the big issue, right? Like Caleb Farley, there's a million questions about the guy. Can he stay healthy? Is he if he does stay healthy, does he have enough experience to play the position and give you 65 out of 66 good snaps every game? That sort of thing. It seems like a really, really big ask when you look at the guy's history on both of those fronts. And then you start thinking, well, does Roger McCreary, the second round pick this year, get that job? Do you rely on Buster Skrine, who's a good pro, but is certainly not going to be anybody's all pro or Pro Bowl cornerback. That's the position that could sort of hold the key to this whole thing. Now you certainly need Bud Dupree to show what we typically think of with the reconstructive knee surgeries, that after a year and a half and beyond that it's a whole different animal and you feel good and you feel much more like yourself. And, Bud Dupree needs to contribute more than 2.5 sacks this year. And you would suspect that's going to be the case. But, the good side is Kevin Byard is at the peak of his play. You would think Amani Hooker after a full season as a starter is going to be better. You're going to think that Christian Fulton after a full season as a starter is going to be better. You have a nice rotation at nose tackle now with Naquan Jones and Pierre Tart. You would think that coaches have more things in their bag in terms of what they can do together with Denico Autry and Jeffrey Simmons right now. And Jeffrey Simmons, you figure, is a guy who's still getting better. I mean, there's an awful lot. Like, Zach Cunningham's a much more instinctive linebacker on the inside than Rashawn Evans ever was, and the tackle numbers he should be able to put up with this defense would be as big as we've seen in some years here. So there's a lot to like with that defense right now. Assuming most of those guys stay healthy. I mean, somebody's going to get hurt. You just hope it's not a devastating injury that takes them out for the year. But I think this is a defense, and it's a defense that you're probably going to have to lean on pretty heavily early in the year while the offense adjusts to not having A.J. Brown and not having Julio Jones and getting, you know, what are they going to do with Derrick Henry? Are they going to try and sort of limit his workload and ease him into the year a little bit more in contrast to what they did last year with him? I mean, there's a lot to sort of, you know, the offensive line is still a work in progress. There's a lot to sort out there. So, I would think you're going to aim for some low scoring wins early in the year here.
Yeah, that was my question. I'm asking everybody this because the thing I like least about this team is the offensive line right now on paper where things stand. Right now, May 17th, you have to predict the opening day offensive line starters against the New York Giants. What's your prediction, David Beauclair?
I'm going Taylor Lewan from the left. Taylor Lewan, Aaron Brewer, Ben Jones, Nate Davis, and I'm going to say Dylan Ravens.
That's mine.
Yeah, you and Rex are right there together.
That's all right. But I don't feel great about it. But I'm with you.
You know, I feel better about Brewer than a lot of folks do. You know, like when I talk to people about it, everybody's like, "Oh, but he's small by offensive lineman standards," and that he is. But you know, he's really an athletic guy, and there, you know, I've heard some talk that he might be the most athletic guy in the offensive line room, even more so than Lewan. So they're probably one and two in some order, or maybe one and one A. And the fact that you have two guys like that next to each other could—I would think, from an offensive line perspective and a pulling and you know, getting to the second level and doing those sorts of things—it probably presents some pretty interesting possibilities right there. And you know, it's going to make the offensive line operate differently. I don't think Aaron Brewer is going to just be steamrolling people the way Roger Saffold has done at times the last couple of years, but this team has been pretty good, and it was certainly very good under Arthur Smith. You know, we'll see more of Todd Downing this year, but of sort of understanding what guys can and can't do and just focusing on what they can do. So I mean, there's some things I would think they can do with Brewer in that spot.
David Beauclair from SI.com, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow, does a great job covering the Tennessee Titans. David, great stuff as always, my friend. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me, boys. Have a good day.
Absolutely. Thanks, you as well. David Beauclair, SI.com. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrow. You're listening to Robbie and Rexrow here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Can you take me higher?
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road's rant of the day. Fresh off seeing Scott Stapp in person at the Predators playoff game, he's leading us back in here today once again on the Rex Rant. Friend of the show, Scott Stapp.
I think one of the biggest mistakes of my life has been saying how much I hate Creed. I've listened to freaking Creed in the last couple years, like way more than in the rest of my entire life combined.
Good.
It's just a terrible – why do I say the songs I hate? I'm going to start saying, you know what I really hate? Abbey Road by the Beatles. That Hall album just sucks.
Well, yeah. You're right about that.
Yeah. Just stop. Yeah, you can't. You know what? I really don't want to hear any Hall & Oates, man. No AC/DC. No Pink Floyd. No, don't play me any Led Zeppelin.
T-Swizzle.
You've already dug your grave, Joe.
Nas Illmatic. Don't like that album. Don't ever play that, please. Wu-Tang. No Wu-Tang. All right. So, okay, today, this actually did get me going a little bit yesterday.
Okay.
So, it was pretty funny, but Pat Beverly, I'm sure a lot of people have seen this, right? Pat Beverly yesterday went off on Chris Paul.
On ESPN, yeah.
On ESPN. I think Pat Beverly, I think he actually stayed up. Like, you know how you see people in Manhattan, they wait all day for, like, David Letterman or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they stand in line? Like, I think he stood outside the doors all night just waiting to get in so he could just unload on Chris Paul. Like, he probably was, like, he was, like, in Minneapolis and the game ended, and he just flew to New York.
He's waiting.
Yeah, he just got himself a red eye and was just like, I cannot wait for this. So he gets in there, and yes, he's overboard with it. I mean, you know, Chris Paul, like, I'm not a huge Chris Paul fan. Chris Paul's a Hall of Famer. He's a great player. And he was bad in that series. Maybe hurt, whatever. Make an excuse, don't make an excuse. He was bad. But, like, the fact that Pat Bev is calling him a cone? Yeah. Like a traffic
like the
cone
drill?
You know, like, he can't guard anybody. He's a cone. He went off, and it was personal. And now, I do think that Pat Beverly has a future as an analyst. I mean, he was good, you know. And look, it's good TV to get people like, say, you know, Charles Barkley, not afraid to say something. Like, someday Draymond Green will be – he'll be a preeminent broadcaster.
Yep.
Talking about the NBA. And there's something to be said for being critical. I think sometimes when you're still playing, it may be a little bit problematic, you know, because you take out your little personal things. But the problem I had was Matt freaking Barnes, okay? And it's one thing in particular he said, which is it's very much a trigger for me. And he was right with a lot of what he said in sort of rebuking Pat Beverly, saying, you know, this is, you know, you went overboard. It's personal, all that stuff. But when he went to you're not on that level and went into the fact that Pat Beverly is a role player, not the same. Again, so what you're saying here is that you can only be, a player, you know, with as much achievement as Chris Paul or more to comment on Chris Paul.
Right.
So, again, this gets to everything, which we, in our business, you get a lot of, well, you didn't play the game, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so, again, so I ordered a steak, and it was cooked like a charcoal brisket. I ordered it rare. You're not on that level. You're not a chef. Shut up. I took my kids to this Disney movie. There's a lot of nudity and profanity. You're not a movie director. You're not on that level. Shut up. You were supposed to paint the living room gray. It's neon pink. You're not a painter. You're not on that level. Shut up. No. No. All these things, we are all consumers of these things too, and we can comment on them. And although Pat Beverly went overboard, he does not have to have the same career stats as Chris Paul to be able to comment on Chris Paul. So please launch this into the sun too. Quote you in
yeah.
One of my favorite phrases from you.
Do you think Matt Barnes has ever commented on like LeBron James?
Well, right. I mean, right. I hope not. I'm sorry. I'm going to sit out this portion of the. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, Matt Barnes can only comment on like Pat Beverly. Yeah. You know, like and he's.
Jared Bayless.
Yeah. Now, yeah. I mean, and he said, you know, like, to be fair to Matt Barnes, he said he compared himself with Beverly and said, you know, people aren't going to be talking about us when we talk about Chris Paul. And that's true. But again, Matt, I actually want you to talk about all the players in the NBA. And that's good. And if one of them plays poorly on a given night, it's okay for you to talk about it. The personal thing's one thing, but this whole you have to have done this, you have to have the same job to talk about it? No.
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 That is
stop it.
It's not how things work. I will say that one of my favorite parts about the NBA, beyond just the basketball part of it, is stuff like Pat Beverly yesterday. Like, they are more so than I think any other professional sport out there. They are willing to say what they think. Like, hockey players, I love them, but some of these hockey interviews post game, it's just brutal. And there's like Connor McDavid is the face of the NHL. He's got the personality of a brick. Like, it's just there's nothing
of a charcoal
going on.
Brisket.
Yeah, like there's nothing going on there. Like, I love it's part pain, of what I love painful. About the NBA is. A lot of guys are not afraid to say what they think, and they just roll with it, man. I like it.
No.
Keep going with it, Pat Beverly.
100%. You know,
never mind the fact that it's Chris Paul, and I don't like him either. But, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, hey, I enjoyed watching him completely stink and them lose. And that was great. But that's okay. You can talk about it. We can all talk about it. Yeah, that does bring up an interesting thing on, you know, the NHL. I feel like we've got a little bit better studio situation with the NHL now with the Switch. I feel like, you know,
agreed.
I mean, and everybody's trying to be inside the NBA. You're never going to get there. Like, it's just, you're never going to get like Shaq, like something like Shaq, like, shut up, you idiot from Auburn or whatever. And then Barkley's like, you went to LSU, dude. Like, I mean, like, you can't recreate what they are. Charles Barkley is – that's someone you turn the channel to watch, to analyze things. And he's wrong a lot too, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't care. Give me all the Barkley, right? So you can't – I mean, you can't replicate that. Everybody's trying. But I do feel like the NHL is at least getting better there. But, yeah, man.
The studio broadcast, like – on TNT especially. Like, I still think, you know, with Levy and Chelios and Messier, it's just like there's zero personality to it.
Chelios
on TNT,
is tough.
Hey, it's tough, man.
Ooh,
on TNT.
Good player.
With Bissonnette and, like, even guys like Liam McHugh and Anson Carter who were on the NBC broadcast, it was so dry.
Better.
It's way better on TNT. Way better.
Honestly, the weakest link there. The great one, right? Are we agree? Yeah. No, you don't agree, Porth? Ryan Porth is in here shaking his head. God, where's Hub?
This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexro. Coming up next, we will be joined by Ryan Porth. Ryan Porth back in town. Ryan Porth will join us in studio for the next hour. We'll get to the Preds and the Titans with Porth as well. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.